Saturday, January 20th, 2007, Upon Further Review, episode number 30. That's right, we're the big 3-0, which means pretty soon I guess we can start whining about how we can't do the things we used to do when we were younger and about how everything is downhill from here. Man, review shows grow up so fast these days. Okay, Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to welcome everybody into episode number 30. We've turned the big 3-0.
Wow.
So is it time to hang the crepe paper, or is that when you get to age 40 that people start doing the black crepe parties?
It's 40.
Okay.
It's 40 when they say you're over the hill.
And incidentally, is that not the most ridiculous thing of all time? Is if it becomes increasingly more depressing the older you get?
I don't know.
Shouldn't
Some
it be more
it
exciting?
Funny.
You know,
some people find it extremely funny to give you a black cake with "rip" written on it. And
they're like, well, it's all downhill from here. You know, right. It's like when we get married and people are just like, well, enjoy your last few seconds of freedom. Ha ha. It's like,
right.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to enjoy
Those
some moments
nice.
Of happiness.
Those were nice moments of freedom.
Jeez. So we want to welcome everybody in and thank everybody for listening once again to our happy little review show that we call Upon Further Review. I don't think we have any other extra business to get to this week other than our reviews themselves.
So. That's right. Let's get to it.
So let's get right down to it. One thing I do want to mention, which is to... I couldn't get through it without a little bit of business.
It's always something.
It's always
got
to be something. I just want to remind everybody to continue to spread the word about our show and make sure that you have not, if you have not done so, please leave a review for us on iTunes and vote for us in Cast Wars. We've actually reached round 7, Clea, of Cast Wars.
Yay!
There's 63 shows left, and I think no longer can we rely on people going, look, it's an old-time tintype. I love voting for people in old-time tintypes.
Honestly, do you really think that's why they voted for us?
A lot of people are just sort of like, well, I can have weird, you know, picture of some strange creature, or I can have these people in a tintype.
I would really love to hear from people to think if they, do you agree with Greg?
They think we're
really
a Civil War
people.
Reenactment show. I remember the Battle of Antietam.
Oh,
when...
God.
But anyway.
All right.
Well, for whatever reason, we want to thank everybody for voting for us. Please continue to do so and check out iTunes as well.
All right.
Now, on to the show itself. And we've got three things for you today.
All frivolous topics.
All frivolous topics. We're going to start with reviewing a minor individual in our history.
Right.
Martin Luther King.
He's got his day, but don't we all?
I know. Exactly. Clea and I have not reviewed a person yet, at least not directly, although we've made, you know.
It's true.
Reviewing the Iraq War, we've got some.
So I think he deserves being the first person that we review.
I would say so. At least directly. So,
right.
So we'll have some things to say about him, and then we are going to review a movie which we just
saw last night. The moment finally arrived.
We finally saw James Bond's Casino Royale, starring Daniel Craig as the new James Bond. And so, that's right. So, I'm sorry, that's not right. And that's the problem, see, because the women in the movie just not that hot, and Clea got to watch Daniel Craig all day, which apparently was hot. I wouldn't know.
They weren't drop dead gorgeous, but they were nice to look at.
Drop dead. Yes, gorgeous, no.
Oh, man.
Anyway, not impressed with that. So we are going to review that movie next. And then we are going to move on to our podcast segment. And we actually have a couple of video casts that we're going to be doing in a row that were submitted to us by a guy named Douglas Elliott, because he's actually commented on a couple of things on our website as well. And he sent us, six podcasts, which are all female-hosted or operated.
Are they all vidcasts?
They're all vidcasts, yes. And
I guess
so
he likes to watch the ladies.
I guess so. And he thought that he wanted us to check out some of them. And so we're going to choose four from that group. Two from that group.
Greg continues
four.
To keep
two
forgetting
from
what
that
we're
group.
Doing.
Two
we're
going to
do
group,
two.
Too. We're going to do two. And
we'll
so we're going to do one this week and one next week.
There we go.
And then we'll be back on to more the sort of standard podcast schedule. So this
we're
week,
choosing them randomly.
That's right. This week we're going to be reviewing Geek Brief TV with Callie Lewis. This is very famous. Probably a more famous show than definitely a more famous show than ours. So right now, yes. We've only been around,
She's up to 120.
She's up to 120
episodes,
or something.
So she's got a little bit of a lead on us.
So we're going to review that show, and hopefully we'll be able to give a little bit more exposure to the show and talk a little bit about women in podcasting. So,
okay.
Which I have a lot to say about. Clea, really, I don't know what you're going to have to contribute to women in podcasting, but...
I mean, what do I know about women?
Right.
And podcasting.
Let's just all let that sink in. Everyone's like,
All right, let's start with the MLK man himself.
Okay, so let's start with Martin Luther King. And obviously, Martin Luther King is an extraordinarily important figure in United States history, but he's also an extraordinary figure in civil rights worldwide. And I think probably the majority of our listeners know some of the basics about Martin Luther King, but let me just give you a little bit of the details. And I found this, by the way, on NobelPrize.org, and I'm not going to give you all the little sublines after that because it'll take forever, but if you look on NobelPrize.org, NobelPrize.org, and you search for Martin Luther King, who of course won the Nobel Peace Prize, you will be able to find his biography.
Right, and in America, right? He was, no one else would, why would they ever have a Martin Luther King Day? I don't know if Canada does it too.
Right, I think it's pretty much an American holiday, that's
so
right.
So on January 15th, which was his birthday back in 1929,
right.
So every January 15th, we celebrate Martin Luther King Day. And, in some instances, people take off and actually do things to celebrate it and actually speak about him and speak about civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And some instances, people don't even get the day off from work or school, but they still try to make something about the day. And some people just get it off and just take the holiday.
Right. I actually, and you know, it's interesting. I find it's always sort of like a corollary to, it's like the opposite of Columbus Day. You know, if schools celebrate Columbus Day, they often also, you know, they have this thing about celebrating Martin Luther King Day.
It's
either
like a political line.
It's a political thing, like, you know, left-wingers like MLK.
Right.
But that's not, I mean, it shouldn't be that way. Everybody should admire, I think, to a degree, what MLK was able to do. And I actually, on Martin Luther King Day, actually watched the entire I Have a Dream speech, which I'm going to see if I can put a clip of on the website as well,
mm-hmm.
because it is really one of the great speeches ever, not just in American history.
Although, I'm sure lots of people have heard it already.
Not the whole thing, though. You know, a lot of them just hear that, you know, I have a dream today, and then they don't really hear all of the stuff that allows to sort of build up.
What about some
what
of his
does.
Other speeches? Because I know you have a few of his speeches.
I do. That's right. He has a famous speech called Sleeping Through a Revolution, mm-hmm. where he talks about, you know, are people going to actually get up and fight segregation, or are they just going to pretend that it doesn't exist?
Right.
He has one about, one which was interesting. When he first did it, he was often criticized for it. And later on, I think it became considered one of his better speeches, which was about being the best street sweeper that you can be.
Mm.
And he talked about this idea that, you know, if God gives it to you to be a street sweeper, then you want to sweep that street so that no one could ever see it as having been swept better. And a lot of people were like, oh, are you just being patronizing? And his whole point was, no, I mean, he was speaking to the downtrodden, the oppressed, the people who felt they didn't matter and were told they didn't matter by the ruling elite.
It sounds a little bit more coming from the pastor side of him.
Absolutely, the religious side of him as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's born in 1929, and his grandfather was a pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. And then his father then was also the pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, and Martin Luther King followed in line. So he came from a long line of preachers and a long line of religious advocates.
Mm-hmm.
And that religion, I think this is one of those things where religion really informed it in the proper way, you know, sort of how Christianity ought rightly be viewed,
right.
is this idea of supporting the poor, the ones who can't speak for themselves, and supporting ultimately the rights of social justice, all things which Christ would have supported.
Right.
And Martin Luther King really drew upon that, I think, in his own work. But obviously, he's not known for his religious work as much as he's known for his civil rights work.
Mm-hmm.
And so after he got his PhD from Boston University, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the controversy with that in 1955. He began working with civil rights movements, and a lot of people will know the most famous of them. His letter for a Birmingham jail, he led a protest in Birmingham, Alabama between the years of 57 and 68, and he was actually arrested and put in jail for, you know, his anti-segregation views, and he wrote this letter from
and
a Birmingham jail.
I don't know if people know about that protest, but it's like he traveled like over 6 million miles.
And spoke over 2,500 times. Yeah, all over the
place.
I
mean, just
the stamina of the man
is unbelievable.
Yep, unbelievable energy. And then, of course, the most famous thing that everyone remembers him for most is the March on Washington of 250,000 people, and that's where he delivered his address, I Have a Dream, which, as I said, I'm going to try to put a clip into the show and on the website, and really became a figure, a sort of symbolic figure of hope in America, especially because for our listeners who are too young to remember this time, or you know, don't know as much about it. Racial relations were so bad in the 1950s and 60s that they were really tearing the country apart. I mean, there was also the Vietnam War and everything,
right.
but even that was racially charged. And you had on the one side, you had the Black Panther Party, you had the Malcolm X's of the world, who, while they were in their own way important and, you know, important civil rights leaders, really preached a message of separation, something which Martin Luther King really resisted. And it's interesting that towards the end of his life, Malcolm X had come to believe much more in Martin Luther King's kinds of views. In fact, there's been a lot of arguments that that he was ultimately assassinated by members of the Nation of Islam because he was stretching too far away from his earlier radicalism, let's say.
That's a controversial belief, but it is a belief nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from Martin Luther King's side of things, there were some people who said he was a sellout because he was too interested in catering to the white man and everything else. But the truth is that Martin Luther King wanted ultimately people to work together. He worked to end segregation. And there really has never been, I would argue, a more effective civil rights leader. When you consider that by the time he had died, largely through his actions, largely through his, you know, leadership, he was able to get the Civil Rights Act passed and, you know, and really ultimately around that time, the grip of the Ku Klux Klan was broken in the South, partially because not only of the Kennedy presidency, but because Martin Luther King had influenced him to do so. And so Martin Luther King ultimately had a significant impact on that. And he was assassinated at the age of 39 only.
Yeah. It was 4 years after he won the Nobel Prize. When he was won it at age 35, he was the youngest person to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. And he was assassinated on April 4th, 1968, on the balcony of his motel room in Memphis, Tennessee. For many years, people believed that it was James Earl Ray who had assassinated him. But even King's own family came to believe towards the end of Ray's life that it was not Ray who had done it, that he had been set up and that there was somebody else involved. And that's led to a lot of conspiracy theories. Did the government take him out because he was too dangerous? Did members of the Black Panther Party? Did other people? Hard to say who took him out, but people think now it was not just James Earl Ray working on his own.
Yeah, at that time, though, he was, I think, going to be working with some unions.
Correct.
Around.
Yeah, he was going to be leading a protest march.
And that's always tricky when you're...
That's true. That's true.
Not to be a conspiracy theorist, but you know, like that's where a lot of people die.
Absolutely.
In America.
In the interest of getting a little bit of stuff out on the other side, the two big controversies that have dogged Martin Luther King throughout his life are, number one, that he was a womanizer. He was married to Coretta Scott King, who just recently passed away herself, but there were lots of accusations of mistresses and, you know, women that he had, affairs that he had outside of marriage. And then the other thing, which was a big controversy with Martin Luther King, was that he plagiarized a portion of his dissertation that he got from Boston University. Now, I want to say two quick things about that.
That was in theology, right?
In theology, right. A couple things I want to say about that. First of all, on the womanizing thing, you know, there seems to be enough evidence that it's probably true. And I guess the point is that almost none of these great people that we respect and admire are people that are without flaws. And, I mean, it's not a great thing. It's not like, yeah, I can certainly defend him doing it. But I guess I would say, you know, it's hard to take that and say, well, because he did this, that invalidates all the other great work that he ever did in his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flaw. It's a really unfortunate one. And I would say the same thing for plagiarism. I mean, everybody knows as an English professor myself that I really, really dislike plagiarism and the theft of intellectual property.
He spends a whole like first class on it.
Exactly.
Class.
But, you know, it's hard to say. Again, with Martin Luther King, I guess I am being a little hypocritical in that I'm judging the man and not the means. But if you consider how much good work this person did, if you consider what a phenomenal, phenomenal speaker he was, what a tireless leader he was, and how much other work that he did in that regard, I almost have to chalk that up to, again, a flaw, not a good thing, shouldn't have done it, should have learned from it, etc. But again, I don't think that invalidates the entire person. And if we go around and start invalidating people based upon their own views and things that were, you know, I'll tell you some other people that'll get thrown out. You can start right out with Abraham Lincoln, who had his own flaws and problems. So the minute that you take one of these leaders that we revere and start looking into their past, Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his mistresses, I mean, lots of different things, you end up invalidating almost every great person, I think, in history. So I'm not defending it, but I don't think it invalidates him as a person.
Simply because everyone does it. So you're saying everyone has their flaws.
Not that, I mean...
Because the point is that it could possibly call into question him in other areas, right? If he did plagiarize his PhD, gotta wonder how many other speeches or letters or books or something he plagiarized.
Well, no, because two things about that. One, after this came out, they vetted something on the order of, I don't remember how many, but they did this exhaustive study and found that he had not plagiarized what they could find, any of his other speeches or letters
or
things like that.
This was the only instance.
This was the only instance, but it's significant, and I don't deny that. It's just that, and I don't defend it. My argument is simply, I don't think it can invalidate everything else that he did. And everything else that he did wasn't sort of building on the work of others. You know, he was the one giving the speeches. You know, he was the one going from place to place. So as a speaker, unparalleled, and as a civil rights leader. I mean, if you consider how brave this guy was, I mean, he's standing up in front of 250,000 people in D.C. He could have been killed right there. And being able to preach what he did, even though it was a preaching a message of unification and all this kind of stuff, it was still, for a lot of people, shocking and wrong and, you know, all this other sort of stuff. And so he really was, in a way, often taking his life into his own hands when he did these things. So I think that bravery deserves credit as well.
All right, let's rating.
As far as rating the man, flaws and all,
yeah.
What do you think?
I was going to say 9.
Yeah, I would also have said, I think, a 9 out of 10.
Okay.
Very important civil rights leader, not without his flaws, but an important person.
All right.
This may be too much for a blunt instrument to understand. Any thug can kill. I want you to take your ego out of the equation.
So you want me to be half monk, half hitman?
I knew it was too early to promote you.
Well, I understand 00s have a very short life expectancy.
Now, we wanted to talk about Casino Royale, but we also wanted to kind of talk about, since we're kind of late on the movie coming out, we wanted to talk about 007 in general.
Right.
So we will rate the movie and discuss the movie, but we'll also talk a little bit about 007 in general.
This can be found at www.sonypictures.com, sonypictures.com/movies/Casino Royale, CasinoRoyale. And I think this came out in November, I believe, of last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, that long ago?
Yeah.
You suck, Greg.
I know. But anyway, this stars Daniel Craig as the new James Bond. And it's really a reboot, honestly, very much in the way Batman Begins was rebooting the Batman franchise. This is sort of rebooting the franchise, which a lot of people thought had gotten tired and had become a little bit, you know, James Bond had become super effeminate and cartoonish and all this kind of stuff. This was sort of to bring it back to the roots of this spy who's a little brutish, who's very cold and calculating, and who has a job to do. And, you know, that Daniel Craig really, I think, represents that kind of Bond very well. A lot of people think this is what Ian Fleming, who's the author of the original Bond, this is the kind of thing he wanted.
It's got aspects of it to the way that 007 had been done in the past, but it's definitely a little bit of that reboot-esque to it. It's kind of pre the bigger plots than the other 007s. He really is going into a casino and playing cards in the hopes of breaking up some terrorists. And it's on a much smaller level.
It was,
everything,
by the way,
is on a much smaller level.
It was Baccarat, you know, in the original Casino Royale, and they changed it to Texas Hold'em because everyone's like, oh, I know about poker. And, you know, so the whole thing is about poker.
I mean, it's smart. Don't get me
wrong.
I mean, poker is so in right now the last couple of years. I mean, this was a smart, they did a lot of smart things in this movie.
Yes.
But definitely, so you're talking on a smaller scale. The fights are smaller scale.
Although the chase scenes, though, I mean, especially some like that, there's an opening chase scene where they're like leaping through this construction site, which
see,
is
it's a chase
that's
scene,
wild.
It's literally him chasing on foot.
That's right.
Guy. It's not in a car.
That
it's
was
not
him, by
going...
the way. Not a stunt guy, I found out. That's all Daniel Craig.
Wow.
He did all of his own stunts. Yeah. Oh, good God.
Okay, so it's not, you know, the car chase scene was very cut short. I mean, there's nothing really big about
it. Nothing. It's not as much spectacle.
Right, exactly. Although it is filmed in Italy and Montenegro and the Bahamas, all gorgeous sites.
All
and
exotic
locations. I hope brings lots and lots of travelers to those areas. Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous
$130
places.
Million dollar budget, so they used it to, to get to these places.
Yeah, I mean, really beautiful, beautiful places. So that's really all that we have to say to it. It's very much worth going to. Again, since it's not on a big, huge scale, I don't think it's something you have to see in the movie theaters. I think it is something that you can Netflix.
Right.
But I really hope for a lot to come from him, because I do think that it was well done. It's a good flick. It's not like, oh my God, the most best movie ever.
Right.
But it's a good 007 movie. It's a good flick. Overall, 007, I mean, Greg, you know more about the 007 franchise. Mm-hmm. The little teeny things like at the end, it says, you know, James Bond will return.
Yep.
There aren't really any stupid names of women. The one female main character, I guess, they have to pretend to be someone else. And I think he made like kind of a joke of, we'll call you Miss Breast
Makes James Bond always had these kind of sexual innuendos and all these things that were sort of at the root of it. And of course, he's supposed to be a ladies' man, you know, who disposes of things. Although one of the things about this movie that's a little different is because it's the sort of origin movie of Bond,
right,
to a degree,
right,
it shows Bond sort of legitimately in love for a bit, and you
right.
find out some information about why he's gotten, you know, more hardened in later life.
Right.
The thing that I think, first of all, I think there were two things that this movie had to accomplish. Number one, it had to prove to people that you could have a blonde Bond, and that you could, or, you know, not a dark-haired Bond, and that you could have somebody like...
He still has the really, really blue piercing eyes.
Yeah, and that's true, he does. And Daniel Craig, the thing is, and you've seen him, he's been in Layer Cake, he's been in Tomb Raider.
He was in the first Tomb Raider.
He's always good in the stuff that he does, and a lot of people have said that liked this movie, and I agree, that he really added a shot of testosterone back into the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because James Bond was never supposed to be completely, oh, well, I believe, and shaken, not stir. You know, that martini drinking kind of type of thing is an element of Bond, but
right.
Bond also is a hired killer, and part of what Bond has to be is he has to sort of straddle the line between hitman and patriot, and
right.
part of what Daniel Craig is able to do is he really down deep is a good person who's
right.
doing what he needs to do,
right.
but this is a brutal job. I
right.
mean, he has to kill people, he has to not, in fact, there's one line in the movie where somebody asks, you know, don't you mind killing so many people, and he says, well, I wouldn't be very good at my job if I did, and that really sort of roots into a lot of what Daniel Craig is about.
Right.
One of the things that this movie I thought did very well, and I thought Craig did very well, is it's very physical. He gets
right.
beat up, he gets
right.
tortured, there's all this stuff that happens, and
it's very real.
It's very real,
and that
physicality
and, right.
is something he brings to it, and I think he really embraced it. I thought Craig was an exceptional Bond.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I walked out of the movie saying, just he was just so real.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really like, and that's why I look forward to seeing him. I think the only aspect of it is it did get a little frou-frou with the romantic scenes.
Frou-frou.
But again, you know, origin film, fine, do we need to see that, you know, that he does fall in love, and that, you know, does play a role in things.
Yeah.
Fine. And it was a long movie.
Yeah.
It was like 2.5 hours.
I thought
long
a little
something.
Over long. And one of the things, I mean, so positive side, Daniel Craig is very good. It also needed to sort of get enough of the Bond stuff, like some
right.
of the little gadgets.
Yes,
there wasn't a lot,
did.
But it was in there.
It was the beginning, and that was cool.
And there were a couple.
And I liked
that
it was kind of a team player. We don't see as much of that in some of the other Bonds. If we got to
the
see
loner
other
thing,
yeah,
oh,
we got
that
to see a few of the other
them?
People at the headquarters.
To a degree, yeah,
a
to a degree.
Bit more.
Well, and also Judi Dench plays M again, who's
yeah,
the sort of leader of intelligence.
Great.
She's always great. There, but there's no Q. There's no, you know,
right.
gadget distributor in this
right.
one. And the only problem I have with that is you have to be very careful not to make this too small. The worst
right.
Bond movie ever is License to Kill, and that's
right.
a movie where this guy is going after a drug dealer. And you're
in your opinion, this is the.
I well, yeah, but I mean, it's also rated routinely as one of the lowest mm-hmm. by, you know, Bond websites and stuff.
Right.
And part of the reason is. A drug dealer? Like,
right.
I mean, that's not what James Bond... This guy is a Secret Service agent. Like,
right.
let the police deal with drug dealers.
Right, right.
And that's the thing about this, is that I'm not... You know, I'm not sure that that the scope of this movie is enough. But
right.
since they're trying to communicate Bond as Bond, I'm willing to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they need to convey is these beautiful women. Sorry. there's two women, and I can't remember the first woman, who's not that significant in the movie, but his big love interest is Ava Green, who is in a movie called Dreamers. When I say over, you say rated, okay? Not attractive. I'm sorry, she's not attractive. And they keep trying to claim, like, oh, she's attractive. Here, we'll put a filter
on her.
She has
a real look to her. She doesn't look fakey. She's
real ugly.
Oh, God.
She's not attractive. I'm sorry. And to me, that's unfair.
Man.
You got to look at Craig and be all psyched out.
Yes,
and I got to look at her and go,
oh, my God. Gorgeousness.
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
Gorgeousness.
But anyway, he sells it. And there were also, the other thing is, the movie I found a little bit long, a little dragged mm-hmm. in some spots. And so I found that was a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some scenes that stood out as
yeah.
being so well done. There were some of the action scenes, even
right.
some of the not even action scenes, are such good set pieces that you'll
right.
end up leaving remembering that.
Right.
And so I think it was a very solid reboot ultimately to the franchise, and
yeah,
on that
agree.
Ground I think it survived. So
okay.
I think it did well. So rating?
7.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay.
I'd say a 7 is reasonable too. Definitely
it's
check it out when you can.
I didn't even think about that, the 007. I just said 7. I didn't mean to do that, but
7. 007.
Okay.
Yeah. You want a review shaken, not stirred.
Okay.
Right.
Or as he would say in the movie, do I look like I care?
He actually says, yeah, do I look like I give a damn? Which is very funny. No more effeminate James Bond for you. So good job. I hope he's there for a long time to come.
Yeah.
Okay. Last on the docket for tonight is the vidcast geekbrief.tv.
If this were an entertainment news podcast, we'd be milking the Donald Trump versus Rosie O'Donnell feud. But we cover tech, so how about we milk that Cisco versus Apple iPhone feud, shall we? Apple, as you may have heard, announced a little product they call the iPhone last week at Macworld. The announcement apparently ruined CES because nobody cared about anything else. About a week before Christmas, Cisco also announced a little product, also dubbed iPhone. The Cisco version is a VoIP phone for Skype. Cisco owns the trademark, and there were negotiations with Apple to license or sell the name, I don't know which. Apparently, that didn't work out so well. Cisco filed a lawsuit against Apple last week. According to Engadget, Mark Chandler of Cisco said, Cisco entered into negotiations with Apple in good faith after Apple repeatedly asked permission to use Cisco's iPhone name. There is no doubt that Apple's new phone is very exciting, but they should not be using our trademark without our permission. Apple spokesman Steve Dowling said the Cisco lawsuit is silly. And this kind of tech news is what I call Valleywagalicious.
And you can find this at www.geekbrief.tv. If you enter that into a browser, it's going to take you to some random pod show thing. And let me just say very quickly, people have talked about this before. There is nothing that will slow down your computer short, you know, this side of America Online than putting pod show anything on your computer. Right. I don't know what they do to slow things down, but that site is the most busted site in terms of technical stuff ever. So if you just put in Geek Brief TV, it'll bring you to someplace where you can download the videos and then watch them at your leisure.
Right.
This is basically a tech show. It's actually very well known, and it's a tech show which is hosted by this woman, Callie Lewis. Normally runs about 5 minutes, and it comes out daily. And it's got little clips of different things. They show different technical stuff about, like, the Consumer Electronics Show. They talked about the iPhone in the latest episode and things with, like, Netflix and stuff like that.
It comes out every day or every
comes out every day. It's daily. Yeah, it's a daily show.
Oh, I thought it was every weekday.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope, I believe it's daily. I mean, at least every other day at the latest,
wow.
But they try to do that, yeah. So, and it's been picked up by Podshow. As I said, it's very successful. And Callie Lewis, part of the reason it works is because Callie Lewis, who is this, is one of
has
the first...
breasts.
Yeah, I mean, the attractive woman thing is partially a selling point for this, and that's why Podshow picked it up to a degree. But, you know, she also knows her stuff. She's fun, and the show itself is not only tech-interested, but yeah, I mean, it's basically targeted towards a male 18 to 35 year old audience that it not only likes tech but likes attractive women. And so This sort of plays to both of those things. But I think one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, since this is our first of, you know, sort of women in podcasting and videocasting, you know, I like Callie. I mean, she's generally warm, she's genuinely friendly, and that comes across, I think, in the show. And so the question is, do you think playing up the sex appeal is something which is damaging ultimately to women in podcasting and vidcasting? I mean, is this a bad thing that this has gotten this kind of notice? What do you think about that? Because clearly the sex appeal is a big part of the show.
I just want to know, did you find what she was saying interesting, and do you want to watch it because of what she's saying? Are you getting a lot out of it?
Depending on the subject, yeah. I mean, some of the tech stuff isn't as interesting to me as other things. But yeah, I mean, I find the tech stuff interesting.
Then fine, then it doesn't matter that she's a woman. But I have to say, if just looking at her, I think she thinks she knows she's cute. Cutesy, 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 cutesy. And I found that really annoying. And then I found she talked way too fast. She's trying to cram it into 5 minutes. I understand that. But she loses me. So many times I lose track of what she's saying. She's talking so fast. I don't know what she's saying.
This was a real positive reaction on your part.
But she, you know, I could see that she could be entertaining. She's engaging. She appears warm, appears cute, appears to know what she's talking about, appears to be nonchalant. And so I could see why people like her.
But you'd want her to step. If it came
I
down to it.
I would not watch it because I find her annoying.
So, but I mean, can you say more about that? I mean, you think she's being fake? I mean, like,
I do not think that she's being fake. They have outtakes at the end of everything. I think it's a very well produced, well edited show. I just find, I know that she knows she's cute and attractive, and that she's using it, and all power to her. But I don't find her interesting, and she talks way too fast, and I find it boring. But that's me.
That's you about tech, or that's you about her?
Well, presumably there's other tech.
There are lots of other ones. That's what I'm saying. Like, is it about the tech stuff, or is it about the fact that you found her annoying to deal with?
And I found her annoying to deal with.
Because they're playing up that aspect, then.
Because they're playing up that she's cute, and because she's talking too fast.
Okay. So then fewer topics are the things that you're thinking about as a start, so that she can deal with, you know, less stuff, so she doesn't have to cram as much stuff in.
No, I'm sure there's people out there that can follow her.
Okay.
I'm sure they can follow her. I'm sure and that's why I asked you, were you able to follow her? If you wanted to know about that stuff, would she be telling you what you needed to
know?
Well,
yes, but the reason that I'm sort of not wanting to answer that question directly is because a lot of times people want to be able, I think that these shows, to be successful, need to reach out to an audience outside of the standard, you know, 18 to 35 year old geeky guy who's, you know, sitting at home looking for attractive women talking about tech
stuff.
How
many digs does she have? She had like
she had like 2,300.
Yeah, she had almost 25, so she's got a good audience.
Well, she's got a good audience, but I mean, you know, the question is how far out can she, I mean, really, in this large scope of things, 2,300 people is not that significant. My question is she, because clearly they're trying, and Podshow picked her up for this reason.
Right.
They think that she's got appeal beyond simply, you know, geeky 18 to 35 year old guys. And my question is, do you think that's true? Because if you, who are not that interested in tech, are not responding to it, and you, who are not particularly interested in cute women, you know, I mean, it's like, no big deal, then if that's not working for you, then that suggests something about that whole method of going after podcasting.
So I think that she could be a lot more effective if she would slow down a little bit more.
Okay.
And speak in such a way that I could actually be following everything that she says.
Okay.
I don't know how she'll be able to do that and continue to be entertaining. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the segment that I don't know if she does every show, but she does majority of the shows, where she'll say something to watch, something I found. I really liked it because it was like a parking space sharing thing in England.
And yeah.
Another one was a zip drive?
Yeah, it was a flash drive, like this thing called Memory Infinite, where they're expanding memory.
Really cool. So yeah. I really feel like she, I mean, the fact that it's daily is absolutely amazing, because obviously
they know their stuff.
They know their stuff, and they're on top of absolutely everything that they have. They do talk about at least like three or four things that are happening every time, and the fact that they're able to fill that into 5 minutes, that's great. So I mean, I think it's popular, and popular for a reason. They're fitting a lot of information if they're in there. If you like tech stuff, it's going to really keep you on top of quite a few things. She is Mac heavy, understandably. Usually when you're into Mac, you know all of the perks and pluses to Mac, and so you err a little bit more side on kind of
emphasis on air. Oh, that's my anti-Mac bias. Right. I'm just kidding. We love Mac people too.
But just, she'll do a nod of, you know, for the Windows people, of explaining, you know, how you might need to tweak things. And you know, so I think it's a very well put together show. And keeping it to 3-5 minutes is quite admirable. I guess maybe it needs to be 10, though. I don't know.
Okay. So too much and too little, really, is too much and too little space, to a degree.
No, I mean, I think the amount that she's covering is good, because you want to get a good amount of things in there.
Okay.
It's just that she's, you know, this is what it is. I felt like it was, you ever watch MTV or VH1 News?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
If you like those little segments where you have this hip alternative person standing there in a cute tight t-shirt and talking about all the, like, the little sound bites of every little thing, this is totally it. And I don't like that. I don't like sound bites.
Okay.
I don't like, I felt like I was watching the news.
Okay.
And I don't like watching the news. So that was my issue.
He wants
it. And
stuff
that's
more. Okay.
why I feel like this is not for me. This is, I don't think there was anything that she could do that could pull me in.
Okay.
So that's why I don't want to make it about my preference. Because I think that obviously there's lots of people that watch MTV News, lots of people watch VH1 News, there's lots of people who watch the news, and if you like that kind of thing, I think they do it very well. It's well edited, she's engaging, they obviously do enough takes where she gets it right and you get to see some of the outtakes, which is funny,
but it's just not a format that you particularly respond to.
It's not a format that I could respond to all. I found it very boring.
Okay, so how about a rating?
A 7, I think.
Yeah, that's what I would have said. I would have said a 7 too, because I understand what you're saying, and I think there's some truth to it. I do think that, and maybe this is just me, I think the sort of hip happening thing is, it's a little old, you know, like, it's just so obvious, like, and now the hip happening show.
Right.
But I do like her, actually, because I think that genuineness comes through. And I mean, I don't mean that you don't like her. I mean, I do like her in this format, and I think it's effective for what it does, but I agree that it is a little bit sort of, and now here we go, here comes hip, you know, and obviously she doesn't need our approval. She's got an audience and everything else. But since, you know, we want to try to give some suggestions about how it could be better, I think that, you know, that's true, that it is a little bit sort of too cool for school at times, and maybe that could affect it a little bit, but is very well put together, very well produced, and will speak in some ways to the VH1 MTV generation.
So if you like kind of watching the MTV soundbite news, and you like you like to know more of what's kind of happening on the tech field, this is for you.
And she opened up in many ways the avenues of, you know, women in podcasting or video casting. You know, there are a lot more women doing video casts like this now, and she was one of the real pioneers in that field, and so she deserves credit for that too. So
kudos.
So I would say, so we say a 7 out of 10 then for Geek Brief TV.
There you go.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us for this week. We want to thank everybody for listening, remind everybody about that whole iTunes Cast Wars spreading the word type stuff that we mentioned before, and I want to wish everyone the very best for a great week. You got anything else, babe?
We got our first snow in the Bronx.
Yay.
On January 18th.
That's right.
So we have reached winter.
So from our winter wonderland of a dusting, January 18th, from Eagle Studios, we want to wish everyone a good week, and we'll see you guys next week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Goodbye.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. And this will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at